Well, let's take a look at our third patient profile package, which focuses on managing a patient who had not used her medication as prescribed. Now, Monica is currently being managed and monitored using opioid therapy. She lives in Tullahoma, Tennessee.
It happened on my 39th birthday.
How you doing?
I was a pharmaceutical rep. I was at a doctor's office talking to him, and as I spoke to him, he noticed something on my neck kind of move around. And the tumor was about 11 and a half inches. I had three surgeries, major surgeries, within a 9-month period. So it was bam, bam, bam. I was told they had to take out my entire trapezius muscle.
And the pain was excruciating. Each time I came out of surgery, the doctor prescribed oxycodone, hydrocodone, something like that.
Baseball time. Okay, gotcha.
But I still had to be the mom. I'm a single mother of two kids, and I could not take it as directed, because I'd be a mom at night, drive during the day.
So I was going all day long without taking the medicine I needed, and by the time I got home, the pain was so extreme that I would take the pain pill. I was giving a little bit of time and taking another pill. Maybe an hour or two later, taking another one.
I was just really misusing them. And that's when I kind of said, something has to change. My kids were not getting a good mom out of me. My doctor brought up a lot of alternatives, and one was inpatient.
Hi, welcome, Monica.
She was medically stable, but in pain. And the problems had to do with the drugs that she was on. She was taking too many and wasn't appropriate in some of the ways she was handling them.
First thing they did was say, medicine is taken here at morning, noon, and night, and you take what's prescribed by your doctor.
I learned a lot about meditation, about how relaxing that is, getting enough sleep, exercise.
You know, you have to really watch those initial behaviors to make sure that you reduce that risk. There are checks and balances, and some are electronic, and some are just checking insurance records, some are checking urines to see where people may have been getting things, or checking the bottles when they come in.
I walked out of here after 30 days in a completely different shape than I walked in.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Monica.
Today I have an excellent doctor who I really trust.
We have Monica on long-acting and short-acting pain medications. Safeguards for minimizing Monica's risk of a relapse are the prescription monitoring program through the State Pharmacy Board, random pill counts, urine drug screens, and being alert for any red flags, such as early refills and whatever that would lead us to suspect abuse of her pain medicine.
He has a contract that you sign as a patient, your rights and responsibilities, and this contract includes you're going to come once a month to an appointment. You're going to always use the same pharmacy, that you could come in for a pill count at any time during the month.
So nothing bad came out of it.
My medical situation has not changed dramatically, and it won't. It's permanent. But I am on a regimen with medicine, and they're working well. Life today is a lot different than it was this time last year.
This is getting out of hand.
My sons, they got a brand new mom. They got someone that came back that was really on schedule, medication-wise, being taken care of, under doctor's orders, that could take care of them.
The thing that I'm most proud of is I'm a better mom now.
Can I go for the high five or the hug?
You guys did a great job. So let's go do something fun for a little while.
Your comments, Dr. Pasek.
You know, I think this is such an interesting case in so many ways. I mean, one of my good colleagues, Doug Gourley, likes to say, you know, sometimes when we see aberrant behavior or problems arising, sometimes it's because of what the patient is doing with the drug, and sometimes it's because of what the drug is doing to the patient. So here's a lady who gets started on a short-acting opioid. It doesn't fit her lifestyle in the least. She has to drive, she has to be active, etc. So she doesn't take it all day. And then she comes home, she's in exquisite pain by the end of the day, and then is not only using, but perhaps even getting into problems of overuse at that point, although, you know, that may or may not happen. But, you know, I think, you know, it's not that different than a person who can't take a certain allergy medication because it's too sedating during the day, and then they get home and they're miserable and have to use it, you know, at night. And so, you know, she was on the wrong approach for her. And perhaps it got started because that was the most comfortable thing for her practitioner. But in subsequent evaluation, it would have been clear that it wasn't working for her. And so she starts coming in perhaps a couple of days or a week early because of her use pattern. And it's because the drug is inappropriate. And so then when the right formulation is used, all of a sudden that evens out. She gets a steady blood level during the day. She can have pain relief during the day. Perhaps that stops it from getting you know, out of control by nighttime. And then in addition to that, she stops overusing. What I also like is that she also learned to not just rely on the medicines. It seems like the treatment setting that she ultimately gravitated towards helped her with exercise and meditation, a whole range of other coping strategies, you know, which I'm sure helped a lot. She looked like she had an extremely busy working mom, that those kind of stress management techniques were probably very helpful.
The only thing I would chime in addition to that would be in a patient like this and in so many individuals with chronic pain problems, again, functional restoration, physical therapy is in terms of maintenance therapy, but on a person like her to get to optimize her ability. And in fact, this is a circumstance where pain begets pain. So if she doesn't have good pain control, she can't do a rehab. If she can't do a rehab, she can't get good pain control. It's a vicious cycle and spiral downward.
I think we also need to credit the providers of care that took care of her for working in such a way that part of their approach to her overall problem included access to medical approaches, opioids, that are helping her. And that's an important point, to be able to work with somebody who needs opioid therapy, who may have other issues. All too often, in my experience, certain providers have mandated essentially to the patient they have to be off the opioid.
Let's take a look at abuse deterrent opioid formulations, which obviously are another tool that clinicians can use to help manage patients with pain on opioid therapy. What are some of the new formulations that are available and in development?
The newest formulation that is available, in my opinion, that could be very helpful in this regard is a preparation, a long-acting morphine preparation with sequestered naltrexone. So if a person uses the medicine appropriately, one can expect to achieve the same degree of pain control as if you're using a long-acting opioid, like morphine. If someone, however, inappropriately uses by crushing the medication and trying to make it a more of an immediate release system, the sequestered naltrexone becomes not sequestered anymore and blunts any euphoria that might be associated with that process, hopefully deterring the person from doing that. So that's an example of a pharmacologic approach to this. Putting aversive substances into the opioid so that if not used appropriately, a substance is released or the substance that is within the medication is extremely unpleasant to the person utilizing it. A physical approach to this would involve, if you crush a medication, sometimes when you crush currently available medications, the bad response happens, that is, it becomes immediate release instead of extended release. Changing the character of the drug so that if it's used other than in its intended form, either crushed or heated, try to be injected, it becomes impossible to use in that way. There are other approaches in development, including alternate routes of administration, for example, transdermal approaches. And finally, other pharmacologic approaches include a prodrug, so that the only way that the medication would become active if taken properly orally.
I would add that in the management of the higher risk patient, these abuse deterrent formulations are going to be helpful, but they don't replace the universal precautions approach. They're part of it. They need to be incorporated into a range of strategies. But that also doesn't mean, in my mind, that they're only for the high risk patient. Not very many pain patients in studies that I've done and others have done are actually get all that involved in changing the route of administration or crushing and snorting or crushing and shooting, mainlining the drug. A lot of abusing populations do that. And because, again, sometimes these medicines are taken from, stolen from, et cetera, from pain patients, sometimes even low-risk patients might be considered for these strategies, given how much contact they might be anticipated to have with the non-medically using population.
So how can these formulations help physicians to deter aberrant drug-related behaviors?
Well, they would certainly take away any reinforcement somebody would have if they, in fact, tried to do that. Most people who abuse drugs are going to try to speed up the rate of by which the drug gets into the system. So if you have a sustained release product, they're going to try to break down the sustained release. You have an ingredient there that will blunt the euphoria if they, in fact, do that. So somebody, for whatever set of reasons, might try it. Might be a person with pain, might be a person who's never had pain, who's using in a recreational fashion right from the beginning. But they'll try it, and it won't be as reinforcing as it might otherwise be, and they'll just move on or say, well, that really wasn't worth it, et cetera, et cetera. And so it really does help in that regard, in that it cuts down on the reward. In the case of the medicines that have the aversive component, like niacin, for example, so that if a person is taking their short-acting oxycodone and is using in a binge-like fashion, like the last patient in the last video, they'd get an accumulation of niacin and have a flushing, uncomfortable niacin-like reaction that might also deter them from overusing intact oral formulations. And so there's a lot of ingenuity here, and they can be helpful, but I just like to reemphasize that they are part of a strategy that, you know, people who abuse drugs have a lot of motivation, they have a lot of time, they find their way around a lot of the things that we try to, the barriers that we try to put up. And so it's, and at the end of the day, these formulations are still meant to deliver drug to people in pain. And so they are really only a part of a puzzle. They have to be put into the universal precautions approach.
Well, doctors, we have had a full and robust discussion of patients with pain and being considered for opioid therapy and really how to manage the situation. What would be the key take-home points for the audience today?
Know the patient you're prescribing to, so carefully select your patients. Realize that opioids, like other medical approaches to treatment of any medical condition, have their benefits and potential risks, and adopt strategies, including the selection of medication, that minimize those risks and maximize the benefits.
I would add that that addiction is not created by exposing people to these drugs. As I said before, addiction is created when you expose a vulnerable person at a vulnerable time. And so we know how to assess the vulnerabilities. We know how to. There are some management strategies that can help control the risk at what is always a vulnerable time in the life of these people when they're suffering with chronic pain. And I think we can do something about it. And I'd really like to echo what Perry said earlier, that the solution to this, to the problem of prescription drug abuse, is not to stop treating pain. It's to get a little smarter, learn your addiction medicine 101, and learn how to apply it when necessary.
And I would say that until such time that we have a pharmacological class of drug that is as versatile and efficacious, potentially efficacious, for the range of pain problems that exist out there as the opioids, it's really our responsibility to learn how to use them properly, select patients appropriately, monitor appropriately, determine where the effectiveness of these may be in that individual patient, and if it turns out we are not deriving the goals of therapy, to be able to determine that in a fair, unbiased manner, and then look at alternative approaches.
Thank you all for joining us in this important conversation today. And we'd also like to thank our viewers, and we hope today's program will be helpful in advising your patients with pain. We also encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post-test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. And if you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. The graphics and the references from the program are also available online. Finally, we'd like to thank Postgraduate Institute for Medicine for accrediting the program and Integrity CE for serving as our educational partner. We'd also like to thank King Pharmaceuticals for providing the educational grant that makes this program possible. I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health CME. Have a nice day.